Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. So I've got to defend something that I didn't think I would defend. And I've got to defend something because a lot of you people, Jared, you hate the Titans. You only say bad things about the Titans. You just this, you that. I will be at the game on Sunday rooting for the Titans. And I was rooting for the Titans against the Bears with my dad, my cousin from Chicago, who's a Bears fan, was over. And I did not enjoy that second half. So I just tell you all right now, you can say that you don't believe me. That's your business. But I do love this football team, but I tell it like it is. And that's why I've got to defend the offensive line. So I don't think that there's been a person alive that has complained more about the Titans offensive line over the last 3 years than me. Ian, would you say that that might actually be accurate?
Probably, yeah.
I mean, I've told you the story about Pee-wee, the guy that used to call Nick Saban's show every week to complain about the offensive line. I'm like Pee-wee, except I don't get a two-minute call every week. I get 20 hours on the radio. And in January, I was complaining about the offensive line. In February, I was nervous that they weren't going to do enough, especially when he came out and said that he felt, Brian Callahan felt like that, PT and Duncan had done a good job or had traits that they liked on tape. That made me very nervous. In March, I was yelling and screaming about Jermaine Illuminor. I was very happy about Lloyd Cushenberry, but I was yelling and screaming about left tackle, right guard, and right tackle, as well as center. Then the draft, we all remember how bad I wanted Joe Alt and the meltdown when Joe Alt went to the Chargers and the meltdown when the Titans drafted J.C. Latham. And we talked about right tackle and the right tackle story. And so, again, I don't think I have to prove this to the audience, but there has been nobody who's been more obsessed, in my opinion, with the Titans offensive line other than Bill Callahan than me. And my obsession lasts a lot longer than Bill Callahan's because his has lasted for 9 months. Mine's lasted for 3 years. And I came out last year before the season and I said, there's no way this offensive line, the one with Dillard and Brewer, and I said, there's no way this can be worse than the line the year before. Because the line the year before was the worst line I had ever seen from the Titans, and I'll be darned. It was the worst line. So I've got to defend the offensive line they have right now. Yes, I think Nicholas Petitfrere, a.k.a.
PT.
PT and his PT fantasy expert job. I think he stinks. I do. I don't think he's getting any better. I don't think he's going to get any better. You know, TD said that Bill Callahan, told him, you know, play more aggressive. I don't think TD's got it, I don't think PT's got it in him. I think PT is what he is. I think he stinks. I think Skoronski, for being the 11th pick in the draft, he will never justify that pick. He will never be good enough, in my opinion, to justify that. I think Latham is a rookie, and he's a work in progress, and it's going to take a little bit of time. And I think Lloyd Cushenberry is fine, but he's paid like he's the top center or one of the top centers in the league, and he's not that. But I understand how free agency works, so I'm not going to get caught up over that. But I think he's a fine NFL player. But I don't think this line is as bad as everybody's making it out to be. I watched the Chicago game and felt like they were creating holes, and I really thought Skoronski was a problem. But other than that, I thought the line did a solid job against Chicago. And I went to the game on Sunday against the Jets, and I didn't walk out of that stadium and think, oh, the offensive line. Oh, my God, I got to hold my nose. Oh, wow. I didn't feel that way. And then I was looking up some of the quarterback stuff on Pro Football Focus. And they have their time to throw metric. And it kind of surprised me. Because in 2024, Will Levis is 13th in the NFL in time to throw and being blitzed, ahead of Matthew Stafford, Jalen Hurts, Baker Mayfield, and Gardner Minshew. Which means when Baker is being blitzed, with that offensive line that Baker's got, with an all-pro left tackle, Baker has less time to throw than Will Levis. Now, maybe it's because Baker gets the ball out faster, but again, still ahead of Stafford and Jalen and those guys. And his time to throw is 16th when not being blitzed, which is ahead of Joe Burrow and Patrick Mahomes. Again, the ball probably comes out sooner with Mahomes, and the ball probably comes out sooner with Burrow. But, I mean, Kansas City's got offensive line problems, and Mahomes is working through it. In fact, I went back and I said, okay, last year, what was the time to throw for the quarterback? Again, we're talking about 2.88 for Will Levis. 2.88, time to throw. 2 seconds at 2.88 seconds. In 2023, Ryan Tannehill, and Levis was 13th in time to throw and being blitzed, Ryan Tannehill was 43rd at 2.48, and 50th when not blitzed. Levis was 29th last year when blitzed at 2.82, and 40th when not blitzed. So last year, Tannehill, when blitzed, 43rd, when not blitzed, 50. Levis, 29th and 40th. This year, Levis, 13th and 16th. That means they're giving him significantly more time to throw. And granted, it's a small sample size through two games. But Will Levis has 2.82 seconds versus the blitz when he had less time last year not being blitzed with that terrible offensive line around him with Duncan and Dillard and Brewer and those guys. And what they're giving right now, again, these are Pro Football Focus's numbers. What they're giving Will Levis right now is significantly better, significantly more time to throw the football than Ryan Tannehill ever had as a Titan, except for 2019 when they had Lawan and Conklin and pretty much everybody was still in their prime. Ben Jones and Saffold. 2019, Tannehill had 2.91. They're giving Levis 2.88. 2.91 and 2.88 is basically the same. Every other year, Tannehill had significantly less time to throw. And what that also tells me is that the coaches are probably trying to protect Levis. As much as Brian Callahan gets up there and says, I got to do a better job and I can do this, and they probably already are doing some of that. Now, I do have to admit, the pressures last year, the Titans averaged about 15 and a half pressures a game, according to Pro Football Focus. This year, they're averaging 16 and a half pressures a game. So that would tell you that the line is not better as far as pass blocking is concerned. But ultimately, I am going with, in my gut, this offensive line. They're bad. PD's right. It's bad. They're bad. But they're not as bad as they've been. And while I think PT, you know, I think he sucks, I think Raidens has been okay, albeit wasn't great last week. Cushenberry will be fine. And Bill Callahan will get Latham, you know, steady at left tackle. I guess what I'm saying is the Titans' offensive line is bad, but it's not, in my opinion, it's not as bad as it's been, which is kind of a step forward. You know, I remember last year, ESPN.com ranked the top offensive lines after week one. And for some reason, the Titans ended up in the top five. I have no idea how, because when I watched the tape, I saw a skittish Tannehill back there that just, I mean, Andre Dillard was getting abused. And I kept saying, guys, this offensive line sucks. And everyone kept saying, no, Jared, you don't understand. ESPN.com says. And I'm like, ESPN.com can say whatever they want to say. I'm just telling you what I saw. That's how I feel right now. Which is, the Titans lead the league in pressures, and the Titans offensive line could do better. But I think the Titans offensive line is a more dependable group this year than they were last year. And I think there's more upside for this group this year than there was last year. And while I'm still not happy about the offensive line, I would not say that offensive line is my biggest concern right now with this football team. Right now, for me, quarterback is a big concern. I'm very disappointed outside of Calvin Ridley at wide receiver. Special teams, specifically punt block, has been a humongous disappointment. It's been a disgrace so far this season. But I just don't think the offensive line is as bad as everybody's making it out to be. And so, while, again, nobody worries about that unit more than I do, nobody cries about that unit more than I do, I don't think they've been as bad as they've been in the past. The Daly, Duncan, Dillard lines. I think this line's okay with PT on it. They need to get a real right tackle in there. But I just, and again, maybe I'm wrong. Because again, Pro Football Focus says 16.5 pressures this year per game compared to the 15.5 last year for the whole season. But I don't think this line, to me, this line is not why you're 0-2. 615-737-1025. We'll get to your phones on that. 615-737-1025. Plus, Will Levis said something yesterday that sounds good. Sounds very good. But I'm not sure it actually makes any sense. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, 1025-1063. The game.
I just want to know from Titans fans, when is enough enough? Because, again, you're saying give him a little bit more time. How much more time do you need to give him? Honestly, that's a real question. It's like, how much time do you want to see Will Levis underneath center and making these same mistakes that he's made, not just this year, but he made them last year as well? So how much longer do you want him underneath center? Because the longer it seems like he's underneath center, it seems like the more he's going to make these types of mistakes. Again, if you've listened to this show, which I know you have over the last 2 weeks, I'm not saying, you know, throw Will out with the bathwater. Hey, if you want to give him an opportunity to redeem himself, go ahead and do it. But I just want fans to know that the longer they continue to stick with him and the more Will Levis continue to do these same things, the more you're going to lose this locker room. The more guys are going to be looking at you as the head coach or the offensive coordinator, or the GM, like, y'all brought in a backup for a reason, a guy that has won games in his league, that has led his team to a playoff for a reason. Use him.
That was D. Mace on Monday. I don't think he was mincing words there with his, let's use the word confidence, in Will Levis. Again, I think Derek's kind of putting himself inside that locker room saying, hey, I'm not interested. Like, if I'm a Titan player, I'm not interested in that. So Will Levis was asked about confidence, given everything that's happened over the first 2 weeks yesterday. Here's what Will Levis had to say.
One of the important things we talked about today as a team or as a group, and just having confidence regardless of, you know, the seemingly disparity of the situation or moment. We got to come out here, whether we're 2-0, 0-2, 15-0, 0-15, with the same attitude, same confidence, knowing that we're going to go out there and beat the brakes off whoever we play. We need to have that confidence as a team, and we're building towards that. And it's great seeing guys coming out here on a Wednesday after a tough loss like that and playing with the intensity and focus that we did. And that's the only way that we're going to get ourselves in the best position to succeed on Sunday. So I'm proud of how we came out and did it today.
We talked about it as a team that we have to have confidence that we can win and beat the brakes off anybody no matter what, even if we've lost 15 games in a row. Somebody help me out here. See, I don't really think that's how confidence works. I think that's giving yourself a pep talk. You know, I've learned over the years how to grieve. You know, and grieving sucks. Let me tell you that right now. But the one thing that you can't do, whether it's losing somebody close to you, a relationship, whatever it may be, you know, what I've learned in grieving is that the idea of, well, you need to think positively and just you need to move on from worrying about your, knock on wood, your father who passed away. You need to just not be sad about that. It doesn't work like that. Like, I know it sounds nice, you know, to pep talk. We should be confident no matter what. That's not how confidence works. That's how positivity works. The idea that we need to walk around the locker room every day saying, hey, you know what? We can beat the Chiefs this week. That's positivity. Confidence. If you were playing the Chiefs or you were playing the Ravens, or, and I know the Ravens are 0-2, but they're still pretty good. If you were playing the best teams in the NFL, San Francisco, if you were playing that team this week, would you have the confidence that you could win? Or would you want to be positive that if everything went your way, you could win? And when I hear Levis talk like that, I kind of roll my eyes, because once again, that's not how confidence works. Just like grieving doesn't work in the sense that you can just move on from whatever you're upset with. It takes time and time and time. Confidence takes success, success, success. You know, they tell the story, Ty Law and Lawyer Malloy do, that they went out to dinner with Tom Brady when he was in his first year as the starter with the Patriots after Drew Bledsoe had gotten hurt. And they're the two captains on the team, and they go out to dinner with Tom Brady, and they sit down with him, and they're like, yeah, Tommy, you know, we're really excited, all that kind of stuff. And Brady looked at him and was like, I'm going to keep the job. And they're like, apparently the two of them, Lawyer Malloy and Ty Law, looked at each other like, over Drew Bledsoe, who's making $100 million? Good luck. 2 years later, 3 years later, I should say, 3 years later, they're in the Super Bowl, and Rodney Harrison is talking to Ty Law about what to do in case the game goes to overtime, and Ty Law looks at Rodney and says, we're not going to overtime. He says, what do you mean we're not going to overtime? Because we have Tom Brady. That's confidence. The idea of, oh, hey, we don't have to worry about this. We got Tom Brady. That's confidence. When there is a proof of concept and you know, yeah, I know we can beat this team. Because I've been in that situation where I've been with a team where we knew we were going to beat somebody, as opposed to a team where we hoped we were going to beat somebody. And sometimes when I hear Levis do this, like he did this last week when he talked about how he knew he has what it takes to be a good quarterback in this league, I'm like, do you? Because I don't know if you have what it takes to be a good quarterback or not. I mean, we're talking about good quarterback. I don't know if Derek Carr has what it takes to be a good quarterback in the league, and he's been doing it for a decade. So, I mean, pardon me if I'm not totally sure if you have what it takes. I think what Levis is doing with some of these press conferences is he's getting up there, and he's saying things not to tell them to me or you. It's what he's telling himself. It's like he's telling him, hey, I've got what it takes to be a good quarterback. And again, I'm not exactly sure that's how confidence works. When you say we've got the confidence no matter what, we could lose 15 in a row and we'd have all the confidence. Well, when you played Georgia when you were at Kentucky, did you have confidence you were going to beat them? Not did you tell yourself, hey, pump yourself up and talk yourself into beating Georgia. Were you confident that you could beat Georgia? And if the answer is yes, you're lying. I'm not saying the Titans don't have confidence, although if I was on that team, I'm not sure I'd have confidence in Levis, especially given, I mean, you heard what Derek said. I mean, goodness gracious. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number, 615-737-1025. We are to your phones next, 615-737-1025 here on Stillman & Company, 1025, 1063 The Game.
Will, have you tried any non-football or non-traditional things in rewiring your brain, or is it more the commitment to reps and film like you said off the top?
No, I think it's more so just football. I think it's important, like on my off days, taking like those few hours to just get away from football, and a lot of that's just been sitting on the couch watching football. So it's not like I have anything much going on during the season other than what we have at hand. But I wouldn't want it any other way. I find solace in this, and I think that that's just the best way that I'm going to improve, is just putting all the focus that I can on my job.
Poor Will Levis. I mean, that's sad. That sounded sad. Ian picked that cut too, by the way. Ian, that sounded sad.
He did sound a little down, didn't he?
That sounded sad. When it's like, yeah, you know, I try on the off day for a couple hours to get away from football. And that's like the guy who blows the game And he gets up there at the press conference and talks about how no matter what happens, I'll have my wife and kids and my family. It's like, damn, dog. Well, let's hope for the best this week. But just know if you lose to Malik, it ain't going to be very peachy around here. By the way, I don't really care about the Levis cell phone thing other than I think it's just really odd. You know, Levis' cell phone number somehow got leaked online and people were calling him and texting him. Like, isn't that something that normally, like, other fans do? Like, if you're a Packer fan, wouldn't you blow up Will Levis's phone before the game on Sunday or on Saturday just to, like, I remember DeMarcus Cousins' phone number got leaked when he was playing basketball at Kentucky. And they put it out there and all the Mississippi State fans had it and they were calling DeMarcus Cousins and whatnot. But, like, Titans fans to leak Will Levis' phone number? That just seems so odd. So unnecessary. One texter chimes in, and I think this might be a pretty insightful text. Because I've been harping on this time to throw stat, where Levis has more time to throw this year, 2.88 seconds time to throw the football, than he did last year, 2.82 or whatever it is. And more than C.J. Stroud, and more than Matthew Stafford, and more than Joe Burrow not facing a blitz, and Patrick Mahomes. One texter goes, I think you're misinterpreting the time to throw stat. Time to throw does not have anything to do with how much time Levis actually has to throw the football. It measures how long it takes from the snap to when the ball leaves his hand. Even if the pocket is clean, you'd still like him to have a low time to throw number because it generally means that he's making his reads quickly. Here's the one thing I'd push back on that with. Is Ryan Tannehill's best year was 2020. I think we can all agree on that. But Ryan Tannehill was insanely efficient in 2019. And in 2019, Ryan Tannehill's time to throw was 2.91. So you're telling me that Ryan Tannehill wasn't making reads quickly in 2019, the year where Ryan Tannehill, for all of us, kind of opened our eyes to like, wow, you know, Ryan Tannehill, he's got it going on. I mean, I remember that Ryan Tannehill 2019 year. 2020, Tannehill was the starter, and Tannehill had signed a new contract, and there was no question about whether or not Tannehill was your quarterback. But in 2019, Ryan Tannehill took the job. And you guys know how big of a Tom Brady fan I am. And even I was saying, nah, let's go with Tannehill over Tom Brady. Because that's how good Tannehill was that year. The quarterback play was so bad for so long, and then Tannehill shows up, and it was like, God, this is what it's like to have a real quarterback, and the fact that we're saying that in regards to Tannehill is actually kind of mind-boggling, given where everybody was the last couple of years on Tannehill. Ian, what a roller coaster those Tannehill years were.
Yeah, they were.
I mean, I remember he started his first game against the Chargers. And I was kind of against it because I was a pro Marcus guy, which I'm not proud to admit, but I'm not going to lie to you. I was a pro Marcus guy. And then Tannehill got the job, and I thought the Titans did everything to screw Marcus, and I didn't think it was fair. And Tannehill goes out there and immediately just starts connecting more. You know, connecting with Davis and connecting with Jonnu Smith and connecting with A.J. Brown. And even, I think, Delanie Walker, he might have thrown the ball to a couple of times. But really, it was Jonnu, Corey Davis, and A.J. that he was really throwing the ball to a lot. And then they won the first game. I can't remember the second game, Tannehill. It might have been that Carolina game where they got beat. And then right after that, they played the Chiefs at home. And Tannehill had a great game and led them back with a fourth quarter comeback. And then they played Jacksonville right around Thanksgiving, and Tannehill kicked ass. And I was like, that's guy. And that guy was 2.91. So you're telling me that that's not a good sign that Tannehill's best year or most efficient year was 2.91, the year that Tannehill made the Pro Bowl? That I have a hard time with. But I am totally for, if you're telling me that I'm not interpreting the Pro Football Focus stats right, I'm not going to be somebody to sit here and say, no, I am, because, you know, hey, I'm still, I don't want to say new to this, but I'm still kind of getting in some of this. Devontae says, Derek Carr is absolutely a good quarterback in the NFL. What are you today? Let's let it go a little bit longer than 2 weeks. Now, if Derek Carr is that dude this year in the with the Saints, and my theory on the Saints is they crushed Carolina, who sucks, and they didn't really smell their farts after they crushed Carolina, because Carolina stinks and everybody knows it. But I think Dallas, and again, I didn't watch a Dallas-New Orleans game, but I think Dallas was kind of smelling their farts after they embarrassed Cleveland, and so maybe Dallas was a little fat and happy ahead of the Saints game. But if that is the case, that the Saints are legit through 2 weeks, doesn't more of the credit go to Clint Kubiak than it does to Derek Carr? Because we know what Derek Carr is. I'm just saying. Again, I haven't watched a second of Saints football this year, so to have an opinion on it would be almost impossible. But if I had to have an opinion, that's the opinion that I think I would have. One texter says, I'm still ride or die for Tannehill, strictly because, like you said, it was the first time I saw a real quarterback wearing a Titans jersey in a decade. You know what's funny? And again, I was in favor of the A.J. Brown trade, and we know how that went down. I mean, I wasn't like pushing for an A.J. Brown trade. I wasn't saying they need to trade A.J., but when they did, I said I understood. And so count me in on that referendum, which was a disaster, and I'm willing to admit it. But I saw Colin Cowherd. Ian, I don't know if you saw this today. Colin Cowherd was on TV. He was talking about how Jalen Hurts with A.J. Brown is a superstar, and Jalen Hurts without A.J. Brown is like a backup quarterback. And I'm like, yeah, I've seen that one before.
Yeah, we said that about Tannehill.
I'm like, I've seen that before. Heard that.
At one point, we even discussed if A.J. Brown was more important to the offense than Derrick Henry.
And he was. Because in that 2021 year, when Derrick Henry got hurt, they still won games. When A.J. got hurt, they lost to the Texans. And that's when the Texans were bad. Now the Texans are legitimately a Super Bowl contender. One Dexter says, Jared, I agree with you on the offensive line. They still suck, but you can tell it isn't anywhere near as bad as the last 2 years. That's just my gut feeling. If you want to take out, you know, metrics, and you want to sit here and show me that actually this line is worse than the Dennis Daly, Andre Dillard lines, I mean, I'll be willing to change my mind. I'm just telling you my feel. Like, I don't think that Levis is getting murdered back there because of the offensive line. Part of me thinks Levis is getting murdered back there because sometimes Levis doesn't understand what's going on. I mean, I go back to that 3rd and 6 against Chicago. Levis is in the shotgun. The play-by-play guy for Fox is yelling out, here they come on the blitz. I'm like, okay, ball's got to go hot. Like, ball's got to come out. And Levis takes the snap, and he waits. And I'm like, throw it. And then he rolls out. I'm like, oh, God. And I'm not putting that on the offensive line. Like, when Chicago blitzes and you're sending guys into the pattern, you know they're going to get there. You got to get the ball out. You know, the sack that they allowed down around the goal line on Sunday, Will McDonald got in there. I think he beat Raidens. It might have been. Might have been PT. I can't remember. But I was more disappointed in Brian Callahan because I wanted them to run the ball. I'm sitting there like they've got 2 timeouts, 30-something seconds, so the clock's not a factor. And I'm like, you're in the shotgun on 3rd and goal from the 8. I'm like, run a draw play with Tony Pollard. The Jets at this point are playing touchdown. You've got 2 plays to get 8 yards. Run a draw for Tony Pollard. Yeah, you ain't going to run into the end zone from the 8-yard line. But if you run a draw, as soon as the ball snapped, the Jets players are naturally going to go back. So when they start going back to defend the pass, and then you run the draw, Pollard should easily get 4 or 5 yards. So now it's 4th and goal at the 3. 4th and goal at the 4. And there's all these different things you could do. Instead, they line it up in shotgun, send 5 guys into the pattern, and Levis gets sacked. And it's like, well, you knew. Like, the Jets knew, you knew. Like, ball's got to come out. And so that's why, I guess, when it comes to me, I feel like, as far as the offensive line is concerned, I feel like they're a little bit better. One texter says, this might sound crazy, but Jalen Hurts is the most boring quarterback in the league to watch. So this may sound crazy, too. Ian, did you watch Monday Night Football Monday, the Eagles and the Falcons?
Most of it, second half mostly.
So I really didn't. I really didn't watch the game. And I'm going to tell you why.
It was kind of a boring game, except the end.
The Falcons just bore me.
Yeah.
It's like I could not get I could not get myself to want to watch that game.
There's lots of field goals.
I don't think Jalen Hurts is, like, boring. I think Jalen Hurts might be a little overrated. And that it may be AJ. You know, it may be – there may be something there. One texter says, have you watched the All-22? Tyler Boyd was open so much, Levis is getting himself killed. So I haven't watched the All-22. But I did see that the next-gen stats say that Tyler Boyd's getting no separation as far as he was open all day. Like, Blake Bedingfield, and I'm not out here shilling for PK's website, but Blake Bedingfield, the old scout for the Titans, he's director of college scouting. He convinced the Titans to draft Derrick Henry in 2016. Blake Bedingfield's been writing articles for Paul for the last however many years. I find that to be the single most insightful stuff on Paul's site. And that's not knocking Paul or Herndon or anybody else. It's just I'm really interested in what Blake has to say. And Blake was basically saying, like, Levis is waiting too long to throw the ball. That Levis is, like, zeroing in on one guy. And Levis is waiting too long to throw the ball. And that, you know, I thought it was very insightful. I don't want to tell you everything he said because, you know, then it'd be basically stealing. But I think a lot of the blame for the offense goes on Levis. And just things that we should expect out of a quarterback and that they've got to get him to do and understand and not just the dumb stuff. Joey from Bellevue says, I hope Andre Dillard starts on Sunday, the Dillard-Malik revenge game. Does Dillard play at all for them?
I don't think so. I think we would have seen something by now.
Dillard, I mean, I'm sorry. Oof. is our phone number if you want to weigh in. That's 615-737-1025 here on the program. Today was a big day. Today was the start of what should be a very, very exciting year. We'll get to that next. Stillman and Company. 102.5, 106 for the game.
This morning, Barry said it's not fantasy hockey. You gotta actually do it on the ice. So, did you see some good things today on the ice?
I did. Yeah, I did. I think kind of the message is to start now, and today we started on time. And it's one day, but it was a good building day. I thought, you know, there was the pace that I was looking for all three practices. A lot of these first days, you don't know what you're going to get after the first one, but I thought our leadership group really drove all three practices, it was one day. Tomorrow's a new day. Got to bring it again, but it was a good day to start building.
Hockey training camp started today for the Predators. That was Andrew Burnett. Let me just say this. I don't care about hockey preseason, like, as far as, you know, who does what, you know, because, like, the games, you know, for the first 3 months of the year, it feels like, are basically the preseason. And then by then, you know if your team's any good or not. And then there's the stretch. Like, you know, get me to the start of the year and be in contention. And then, you know, boom, here we go. But let me just say this. I am incredibly excited for the hockey season this year. I don't know when the first game I'm going to is. I do know that now that I am having a Canadian child, that I am super, super, super into this season. And I guess, you know, my nephews think it's pretty cool that I have, like, you know, hockey tickets or whatever. But anywho, when it comes to the Predators this year in training camp, I'm expecting a good – here's all I'm expecting from the Predators. I'm expecting a good season that results in a top three finish in the division, probably number one or number two, and I expect them to make the second round of the playoffs. And my theory with the NHL is the best you can ask for is the second round of the playoffs. I don't believe in this Stanley Cup or bust kind of stuff, because once you get to the second round, like, I don't remember who Florida played, Ian, in the first round last year. Probably some Scarbini team. Was it Tampa?
I think it might have been Tampa.
And I think they handled them pretty easily.
Yeah, I think so.
And then once they got to that second round and they played, they didn't play the Rangers, they played Boston. When they played Boston in the second, like, Boston is a legitimate cup contender. Like, that is, you get to the second round of the NHL playoffs, like, everybody there for the most part is a cup contender, unless somebody, you know, upsets a one seed or something like that in the first round. So that's kind of my expectation. You get to the second round, anything's possible. They've got depth. They've got more goal scorers than they've ever had, and these contracts might not age well. But right now, this is when the contracts are kind of, you know, Stamkos is still got game. Marchessault still has game. O'Reilly still got game. They signed the goalie back, all that kind of stuff. So I am incredibly excited for this hockey season, and that's my expectation, is that they have got a team that can compete for the cup, that has the assets to be able to make moves and acquire guys and things like that around the deadline if they're lacking in any way. And I think they've got the right players. I'm not going to say the right players to win the cup, because, again, I don't think you can say this team has to win the cup. I don't believe in that. But I think they've got a solid group of players. They've got the right coach. I know they've got the right coach. I know the power play was a disaster in the playoffs. That's okay. And I think they got the right general manager. And so I'm excited. I did notice the line combinations today. Like, when they sent out an email at 6 a.m. that had the three different sets, as I looked through that, I saw the three different practice sets they had. Did you look at that this morning, Ian?
Yeah.
By the way, let me say this. That's got to be just a long day to have three practice sessions starting at like 8 a.m. That's going to be a long day for the coaching staff.
Yep.
But regardless, I saw that they had the top line from last year, Forsberg, O'Reilly, and Nyquist. I saw the second group had Novak, Stamkos and Marchessault. And I saw that the third group had what we would assume are going to be the third and fourth lines. And I saw that Tomasino was out there with the third line today. And Zachary Leroux, who Barry Trotz said after the AHL season he wasn't sure was ready, was out there with the fourth group. So I did kind of get excited keeping my eye on that one. And somebody says in the YouTube chat that I'm pretending to be excited about hockey. I'm not pretending to be excited about hockey. I'm super excited about hockey. In fact, you know, sometimes I check my brain out during commercial breaks. I know that that sounds crazy, but sometimes I do. I used to check my brain out during Ask the GM when we would just do calls for 30 minutes, and it'd be like, Johnny, you're up next with the GM. Go ahead. And then I would just let Floyd, and my brain would just kind of turn off, and I would just think about whatever. Well, now, obviously, I can't do that when it's just me doing the talking, but during the commercial break, right before we came back, when I clicked my brain back on, I wanted to be like, oh, you know, when's the first preseason game that's at home? I know they play on Sunday on the road, but when's the first preseason game at home? Because if they play a preseason game on a weekday at home, we're going to be live out at the arena, and then it'd be exciting to go. That's what I was thinking about. So don't tell me that I'm not excited about the start of the hockey season when I'm like, oh, yeah, when's the first game that we're going to be there that we always are? Let's see. Thursday, October 10th against the Stars. Is that opening night?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'll be going to that, which I'm very, very excited about. Let's see. I don't have the preseason schedule in front of me.
I can't remember off the top of my head. Hold on. I have a little bit of it right
okay,
now.
Okay, I got it right here. So I believe it's a Saturday and a Sunday at home against Tampa, October 5th. When is October 5th? What is that?
That's a Saturday.
So I guess all the preseason games are the weekend, so we won't be live at any of those, but, you know, that's okay. I'm excited. I mean, I'll tell you right now, this team has a chance.
I think, Saturday the 28th. Yeah, it's a home game. They have one on the 27th. That's a road game. So, yeah, it might not be till that week. Home versus Carolina. Yeah, that's Saturday the 5th. So, yeah, that looks like the first. Yeah, mostly on the weekends.
Okay, so we will be there on October 10th when they play the Dallas Stars. And I'm excited about that to open the season. Again, I think they should get to the second round of the playoffs. And once you get to the second round of the playoffs, anything is possible. Colorado, cup contender, got to the second round of the playoffs last year and lost. Because that's how this sport works. The best team the Predators have ever had, 2018, got to the second round of the playoffs and lost. So that's just the expectation for the season. Now, if you listen to the very, very beginning of the show, I said we'd be giving away a four-pack of tickets to see Metallica. Be caller 5 right now at 615-737-1025, and you're going to win four-pack of tickets to see Metallica before you can buy them at Nissan Stadium. This pair, one pair, is for the show on, on Thursday, May 1st, and one pair is for Saturday, May 3rd. Tickets go on sale Friday, September 27th at 10 a.m. That's it for us. We're out of here. Stoneman & Company. We'll see everybody tomorrow at 2.